It's November of 2008. Barack Obama was elected only a couple of weeks ago. In the small town of Laurel, Mississippi, sits a grocery store called Las Americas. The owner is Panamanian, and most of the customers are Mexican and Guatemalan. Those communities have been growing steadily here over the past decade. But for the past 3 months, this normally bustling store has been virtually empty. That's Andrea, the store manager. She's walking through the aisles and pointing out the recent signs of change, although lack of change might be a better description. With hundreds of customers suddenly gone, her stock isn't moving.
Aquí manteníamos las tortillas congeladas.
Here is where we kept frozen tortillas. This case would stay full for most of the week. Now there's nothing in there. And you see all these sodas? I've had them for 15 to 20 days. It's totally stopped. Lots of people used to send money home to their families, but not anymore. Las piñatas, too. There used to be a lot of parties, children's birthdays, baptisms, and I would sell piñatas, but no more.
On August 25, 2008, just a few months before Andrea was walking through this store, federal immigration agents swooped in on an electrical transformer factory in Laurel owned by Howard Industries. Almost 600 employees were arrested for working illegally. Almost overnight, the raid devastated the growing Latino population in Laurel.
You can feel the emptiness in the streets and in the parks. Houses sit abandoned, with everything inside. Prostitutes and rats have set up in the houses. It makes me very sad.
Most of the other Latinos left town or have stayed put but are without any income. Angelica Olmedo is one of them. She was a worker at Howard. She's one of about 100 that were released from federal detention for humanitarian reasons. In her case, to take care of her 12-year-old son. But Angelica, along with the 100 other released detainees, can't work now and is depending largely on charity to survive.
People are losing faith. Because if you don't pay the rent here, they kick you out. If you don't pay the lights, they turn it off. If you don't pay the water, they turn it off. And there are people in their houses already without electricity. It's very, very difficult.
Nine workers were charged with identity theft, and the other 500 or so with non-criminal immigration violations. But only one Howard Industry company official was charged with any crimes. In December 2009, the company's former human resources manager pled guilty to one conspiracy count of knowingly hiring illegal immigrants. In other words, the employer took almost none of the blame, and a growing community was destroyed. But if what happened in Laurel, Mississippi was tragic, the ICE raid on Postville, Iowa, a few months earlier in May of 2008, was a full-on catastrophe. That raid didn't just tear apart the Latino community, but the entire town. Postville is a tiny town of less than 3,000 people, in the middle of the cornfields in northeast Iowa. Inside Club 51, the only bar on the main drag, a group of retired farmers play cards and sip Bud Lights. One reluctantly gives his take on what's known simply as the raid.
They put the raid on and broke the town and broke everybody.
The federal immigration raid in May of 2008 was at Agriprocessors, the largest kosher meat processing plant in the world.
They just come with helicopters and they loaded 400 people up and hauled them away. The wives were here and little kids were here and little kids are here yet today. They can't work and they can't do nothing.
At the time, a few months before the raid in Mississippi, the Postville, Iowa raid was the largest in U.S. history. Almost 400 undocumented workers were arrested. And with many other residents scared, the population of the town decreased about 40%. With that exodus of people, the town's economy collapsed.
If you can make it through this, then you could probably make it through everything, anything. That's the feeling on the street now.
Meyer, who didn't want to give his last name, owns a kosher grocery store in downtown Postville, which mainly caters to the Orthodox Jewish community here. Because of the kosher meatpacking plant, there were about 100 Jewish families here, one of the largest Orthodox communities in the Midwest. But since the raid, more than half of them have left.
You know, just on the block that we're on, there's 6 storefronts that are empty that just, you know, 6-7 months ago were full.
Meyer has given many of his customers food on credit. Not only is it his only chance for his store to survive, but he can't really deny his own neighbors food to eat, especially when the nearest kosher grocery is at least 3 hours drive away in Minneapolis. His is far from the only business suffering.
There are lots of those little things. You know, the hardware store that's owed money because the landlords aren't having enough people to rent their apartments, to pay the rent, so that the landlord can turn around and pay the hardware store for the goods that they bought in order to maintain their buildings.
Mark Gray is a professor of anthropology at the University of Iowa and has been studying the town of Postville for more than a decade.
There are the cattlemen who no longer have a place to sell their cattle, and the feed dealerships who no longer sell the feed to the guys who can't grow cattle anymore because there's nobody around here to buy them. So there are all these ripple effects.
That ripple effect didn't stop at the Postville city limits. Neighboring towns and counties all felt an economic implosion. Postville's mayor unsuccessfully tried to have the state declare the town an economic and human disaster area. Gray said it was a real-world test of his academic beliefs.
You know, a lot of us have argued for years that big workplace raids were not the answer. That's not immigration reform. We certainly understand and respect that the immigration authorities had a job to do. They did their job. But there was no thought given whatsoever to the implications for the community itself when you arrest 20% of the town's population.
Then came another test of the immigration debate rhetoric. Immigrants' rights advocates have long argued that we need the undocumented to do the low-paying jobs no one else wants. In Postville, the disappearance of almost half the population meant a sudden shortage of available labor. When the agriprocessor's meatpacking plant wanted to quickly get back up to speed, that hypothetical assumption about who would take those jobs was put to the test.
The emphasis came to hiring a legal workforce made up of people who are legally eligible to work in the United States, and the plant hired staffing agencies, many of whom were simply going to homeless shelters and picking up people in halfway houses and so forth, a lot of down-in-their-luck types. A lot of convicted felons, a lot of drug addicts, frankly, a lot of people with problems who were brought into this little town, and it didn't work. Crime rates went through the roof.
Scott, who didn't want to give his last name, came all the way from Buffalo, New York, to work at agriprocessors. He says promises made to him and fellow co-workers were not kept.
The way they put it sounded very good. When we got out here, it was nothing like that. They were promised higher pay, 6 days a week, overtime. But some people just didn't take everybody that came with us. So they ended up going back to nothing, where they came from.
The poor treatment of employees is a hallmark of industries where undocumented workers often end up, and agriprocessors was no exception. The company's former owner, an executive, and several employees are awaiting trial on child labor charges brought by the state of Iowa. However, all charges related to hiring and employing undocumented workers have been dropped. These two former agriprocessors workers, who didn't want to give their names, say the conditions on the meatpacking plant floor were unsanitary and dangerous.
Many times they told me that I couldn't take a break until the assembly line finished. I urinated in my pants many times because they didn't give me permission to go to the bathroom.
She had her finger cut by a knife. They never gave her a rest or medical care.
They never stopped to clean the machine. They just kept working this way.
Michelle Devlin is a professor of public health at the University of Iowa. Along with Professor Mark Gray, she co-authored a 2009 book called Postville, Surviving Diversity in Small-Town America. Devlin says employers are largely to blame for the lack of qualified labor, which brings on the need for immigrant workers.
There was a time several decades ago when these kinds of larger companies and packing plants and other large employers paid living wages, fair wages, decent wages, and people at work there were local people, were Americans, and they could support entire families on the salary of one person. That picture changed economically over the past few decades, and what we see now are a lot of these companies that open up, they don't pay union wages, and because the economy got very depressed in this part of the United States and Midwest and some of our other areas, a lot of the population left the state and went to places like California and New York and other areas where there were jobs. And so now a lot of states in rural America literally do not have enough people to work in them. So if these companies are going to actually have employees, they either have to raise those salaries up, way up, to reattract other people to come back in and to actually work here, or they're going to have to rely once again on immigrants and refugees and other kinds of people to do the work. And the question is, will these people be here legally or not legally? And that's going to remain the big question. Where are the workers going to come from? Frankly, I'm not sure they've figured that out yet in Postville or in other towns that look like Postville around the U.S.
These are the discussions now taking place in Postville, where residents can no longer argue abstractly about immigration policy. One thing seems unanimous, according to Marin Olson. She's coordinator of the Postville Response Coalition, a group offering assistance to local residents.
But I think the one thing everyone can agree on is this should not happen to any other town. This should never happen again.
Olson says in such a small community, even people who thought of the different ethnicities as us and them suddenly realized how closely they were all tied together.
We had white kids who asked their parents, because their friends' parents had been taken away, children would come home and say, when are they coming to take you? It profoundly shook this community to say, my neighbor's gone. My child's friend's parents are gone. What does that do to a sense of safety, to a sense of security? This is small town Iowa. And it pulled the rug out.
Meyer, the kosher grocery store owner, says it will take years to rebuild the community.
A customer of mine summed it up very well, that she said, a lot of good people got hurt for not a very good reason. The government came in here, and what did they accomplish? They may have made a few arrests. They may have deported a few people. Does anybody feel safer now? No. Does anybody feel more financially secure? No. Does anybody feel more, nothing. There's nothing. I don't think anybody, even those that are diehard, against the illegal immigration problem, can point to one positive thing that came out of this Postville experiment.
By many accounts, undocumented workers have been leaving the U.S. over the past few years, which some people credit to a series of raids like those in Iowa and Mississippi. But with the economic downturn, especially in immigrant-heavy industries like construction, it's hard to tell if those departures have more to do with tough immigration policies or simply a lack of available jobs. Eber Elleria, a Mexican immigrant who was arrested in the raid in Laurel, says tougher laws won't drive him away.
There's no opportunity for me to better myself in my country. People are hungry and starving. That's why I left it in the first place. So if there's the opportunity for me to struggle and fight and stay here, and if there's a small speck of a chance of me being able to stay, then I will stay here and wait for that moment.
Barack Obama promised during his presidential campaign to move away from workplace raids. And 2010 is being promised as a year when immigration reform will be taking place in Congress. Bill Chandler, the executive director of the Mississippi Immigrants' Rights Alliance, says that unlike 2007, when Congress unsuccessfully tried to revamp the system, this time local organizers and immigrant communities themselves have to be part of the legislative process.
The grassroots groups were left out of that discussion. And what we're trying to do is make sure that doesn't happen again, that the experiences that we have and the hundreds of other groups around the country are included in that discussion, and that the design of the bill is based on real-life experience.
For Making Contact, I'm Andrew Stelzer.